is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There is a significant move being made within the ANC by its leadership to finally rid itself of that faction that fights against the attempt to clean up.
That's Richard Kaland, professor of politics at the University of Cape Town, on the South African president's push to prosecute members of his party for alleged corruption. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. is suspending some aid to Ethiopia over lack of progress over its massive dam project on the River Nile. And press freedom advocates in Zimbabwe have welcomed the release on bail of a reporter charged with stoking anti-government violence. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. South Africa is on the brink of a turning point in its political history, according to some of the country's most respected analysts. A corruption scandal has exposed the rift in the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, between those who support President Cyril Ramaphosa and those who remain loyal to his predecessor, Jacob Zuma. Darren Taylor reports.
Political observers say ANC officials alleged theft of millions of dollars related to the supply of medical equipment to treat COVID-19 is finally forcing the president to act. But his opponents in his party, known as the Fight Back faction, are doing just that, going as far as accusing Ramaphosa of corruption himself.
That Fight Back faction is feeling even more heat than Ramaphosa.
Richard Kaland is a politics professor at the University of Cape Town.
It's no coincidence that there is a sense that prosecutions may be imminent in relation to very senior politically connected people within the ANC, such as Secretary General Ace Magashule. Now is the time for a showdown. The chips are really falling.
Magashule is open about his continued loyalty to Zuma and has long been linked to corruption. Kaland says those who believe Ramaphosa's apparent renewed vigor to fight dirty elements within the ANC is just window dressing are wrong.
There is a significant move being made within the ANC by its leadership to finally rid itself of that faction that fights against the attempt to clean up.
One of the senior ANC officers implicated in graft, Andile Lungisa, says party leaders are targeting him, ironically, because he and his fellow councillors in Nelson Mandela Bay have exposed their corrupt activities.
While the first ANC councillors all over the country, first people to report crimes, stealing, theft around the issue of COVID-19. Those who are involved in corruption, they cannot act in this city. They cannot be able to play leading role. It was undermined.
Lungisa is one of several ANC officials who've previously implied that Ramaphosa bribed party leaders to turn against Zuma in the election race 3 years ago. The president denies the claim. Kaland says Lungisa and other anti-Ramaphosa ANC members are desperate and scared.
The noise, the bark of the Fight Back faction is much bigger than its bite. It doesn't have the numbers in the broader ANC and certainly not in the public.
The analyst says it's no coincidence that the only people who are attacking Ramaphosa are those implicated in corruption.
They're all people who stand to lose a lot if Ramaphosa's reform program continues and if his cleanup operation succeeds.
Kaland's convinced that the president's anti-corruption units will soon arrest several senior ANC members.
That Fight Back faction is under no illusions about what lies ahead. The net is closing on it, and so it has to find a way of weakening the president so that it can then start to break up those institutions that he has started to, with good effect, I think, over the last 2 years, rebuild.
This is the time, says Calland, that South Africans, tired of the corruption of the ANC administrations that followed Mandela, have been waiting for.
Ramaphosa has basically calculated that he would rather go down in history as the man who stood up for the right thing in his party and failed than to go down as the man in history who was weak, who vacillated in the face of grand corruption and did nothing.
The president has pushed the country onto a precipice, analysts say, and as dangerous as that is, it's where South Africa needs to be right now. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The State Department said yesterday the U.S. is suspending some aid to Ethiopia over the lack of progress in talks with Egypt and Sudan over its massive dam project on the River Nile. A department spokesperson said the decision to temporarily pause some aid to a key regional security ally reflects our concern about Ethiopia's unilateral decision to begin to fill the dam before an agreement and all necessary dam safety measures were in place. The dispute centers on two of Africa's most populous and powerful nations, Ethiopia and Egypt, and some fear it could lead to military conflict. Egypt now faces going back to the UN Security Council or relying on U.S. pressure. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the options with Abdurrahman Salah, former Egyptian ambassador to Turkey and a former diplomat in the U.S.
Actually, we had a formal meeting of the Security Council where all the 15 members supported Egypt's call for Ethiopia to abstain from any unilateral action that would negatively impact the downstream countries like Sudan and Egypt. All the 15 agreed on that, and Egypt presented a draft resolution that would definitely call for that. Immediately afterward, unfortunately, Ethiopia went ahead with a unilateral action and started the first filling of the dam. I would think that if our resolution would be pushed for a vote, it would be very difficult for any country that supported officially our call for abstaining from unilateral action that would vote against it or even abstain. But we don't want this to be resolved through a coercive measure. We would like to reach a negotiated settlement.
What role do you see for the United States in bridging the gap between Egypt and Ethiopia after failing to pressure Ethiopia to sign on the tentative agreement was produced in the Washington talks?
I believe the U.S. can do more. I believe that withholding a small part of the Ethiopian assistance is not enough to make Ethiopia change its mind. And I think the U.S. administration and the U.S. Congress can do much more to encourage Ethiopia to reach a peaceful, negotiated settlement. And I don't think that the U.S. used all its leverage on Ethiopia. I know there are domestic political considerations in the U.S. and in Ethiopia. I understand. But ultimately, the U.S. needs to weigh in to prevent an international conflict from erupting in our part of the world.
Mr. Ambassador, there is a mounting popular pressure in Egypt to resort to a military action. Could that be the last resort for Egypt?
Well, it is very ironic that no Egyptian official spoke or mentioned the use of military force. It was unfortunately the Ethiopian politicians who are using this tough talk to, I think, to raise some political support for their election chances. No official in Egypt made any reference to the use of military force. Of course, every country has the right to defend its survival and its people prosperity. And even the Charter of the United Nations recognizes this right. But no official in Egypt have ever mentioned such a possibility. We are still negotiating in good faith, and we are hopeful that our Ethiopian colleagues would follow the same path.
That was Abdurrahman Saleh, former Egyptian ambassador to Turkey and a former diplomat in the U.S., speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Tanzania is heading towards October elections after 5 years under President John Magufuli. He has initiated major infrastructure projects and fought official corruption, but critics accuse Magufuli of ignoring concerns about the projects and cracking down on opponents and freedom of the press. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Like 16% of rural Tanzanians, 87-year-old Zaina Mohamed has lived without power for 30 years. But she hopes the Rufiji hydropower project will change that by making electricity cheap enough for her to afford.
Mradi wa umeme. Sasa wakati utavyokamilika.
When the electricity project is completed, I'll not have to use a kerosene lamp anymore, she says, adding that things will be better as she'll have electricity. One of President John Magufuli's mega projects, the dam is expected to be finished in 2022 and provide 2,100 megawatts of electricity, tripling Tanzania's hydropower.
Tuna imani kubwa, utakapokamilika wananchi wengi watachana na matumizi ya kuni na mkaa.
Magufuli says official believe that when completed, many citizens will stop using firewood and charcoal. He adds that instead, they'll be using electricity that will be available at cheap prices. Construction is taking place in the Selous Game Reserve, a wildlife protection area the size of Switzerland. Conservationists say, as with most of Magufuli's mega projects, the hydropower will come at a cost. Frida Musilimu is an environmentalist from Mazingira Plus, an organization that fights for a better environment through protection and conservation advocacy.
The ecosystem of the Selous Game Reserve is specifically for the wildlife. So the introduction of the hydroelectricity plant at the Selous Game Reserve tend to some species which were supposed to be, or which used to be available in that area, are going to be lost.
The president's supporters note his projects, such as the Standard Gauge Railway to link Tanzania to the neighboring Rwanda and Uganda, will help boost the economy. Magufuli earned the nickname the Bulldozer for his roady projects and later for his actions to reduce spending and corruption. Critics say he cracks down on free press and is intolerant of opponents. Maxence Melo is a founder of Jamii Forums, a citizen journalism and a whistleblowing website.
Nilipitia kuitwa, kuhojiwa mara nyingi, kukamatwa.
Melo says he has experienced being questioned many times by authorities, arrested, held by police and taken to prison. Melo adds that he has been charged with various crimes since 2016 and been taken to court more than 148 times. Tanzania's opposition party for democracy and progress, known in Swahili as Chadema, chose Tundu Lissu, who returned from self-imposed exile in July, to challenge Magufuli in October's presidential election. An outspoken Magufuli critic, Lissu left the country in 2017 after gunmen shot him 16 times. Singo Benson is the deputy secretary of Chadema.
Miaka mitano, tumeshuhudia kinyume na katiba.
During these 5 years, we have experienced against the constitution, against the law, political parties being prohibited from performing their activities, he says. Benson adds that is the first blow against democracy, because democracy includes people's freedom of expression and to have many political parties, alternative parties that can give out alternative ideas. At the August launch of his re-election campaign, Magufuli touted transforming Tanzania from a low-income country to a middle-income one. While his critics see darkness washing over some freedoms, Magufuli's supporters look to economic development for a brighter future. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Press freedom advocates in Zimbabwe have welcomed the release on bail of a reporter charged with stoking anti-government violence. But they say the conditions placed on Hopewell Chinono violate his right to free expression. A court in Harare granted Chin'ono the bail late Wednesday after four failed attempts and more than a month behind bars. He has been ordered not to post anything on social media, as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
On Thursday, the Media Institute of Southern Africa said it welcomed the release of Hopo Chin'ono on bail after more than 6 weeks at Chikurubi Maximum Prison. Thabani Moyo, the head of the media advocacy group in Zimbabwe, says Chin'ono's bail conditions are too restrictive.
Hopo is not free. What has happened is that he has been removed from custody, but he's still being pursued through trial coming from his home. He is being stopped from performing journalism, literally. When a court then bars him from accessing the online platform where he practices his craft, literally what they are saying is the medium becomes the message. We are saying journalism is really on trial in Zimbabwe.
Chin'ono was arrested July 20th along with an opposition leader, Jacob Ngaruvume. The two were accused of stoking violence through social media ahead of a July 31st anti-government protest in Harare. Security forces broke up the protest before it began. The government said the protest would have exposed more people to COVID-19, the illness caused by the coronavirus. Critics say President Emmerson Mnangagwa is stifling dissent following the steps of his predecessor, the late Robert Mugabe. Doug Coltart from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says Chin'ono's bail conditions curtail the journalist's constitutional right to freedom of expression.
Of course, we are happy that our client has now been granted bail. That is the main purpose for us, was to ensure that he gets out. Of course, the fact that he has been incarcerated all this time is a huge injustice. These bail conditions are extremely strict. We feel that they are overly stringent. They do even restrict his constitutional rights. That we disagree with.
The government says it will not comment on Chin'ono's case ahead of his next court appearance, but it says it does not restrict the work of journalists in Zimbabwe. Here is Information Minister Monica Mtswangwa.
Information is power, and we need our people to be informed of what is happening on the ground. We are talking about COVID-19 preventative and precautionary measures because our people, yes, some may not wear their masks, but they are aware of COVID-19. And because of the work which journalists have been doing out there. So we continue working as partners.
When Mnangagwa took power in November 2017 with the help of the army, he promised to relax tough media laws enacted under Mugabe. Media watchdogs and rights groups say it is taking time for the reforms to materialize. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The Ministry of Trade and Industry in Ghana has closed at least 255 shops operated by foreign residents in Accra because they lacked proper documentation. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
The Ministry of Trade and Industry carried out the closures in recent days after numerous complaints that foreigners were illegally engaged in the retail trade. The affected shops, which mostly belong to Nigerian traders, were locked up. Authorities say they will not be reopened until the owners have each paid $1 million as required under the Ghana Investment Promotion Council regulation for foreign-owned retail businesses. Prince Wache Watson, head of communication and advocacy at the Ministry of Trade and Industry, says the Investment Promotion Council regulations bar foreigners from engaging in retail trade, especially in the local market, unless they have proper registration. He says the traders were given ample time to submit their document to the ministry for verification. He also noted that last year, the Ghana Union of Traders Association locked up some shops owned by foreigners. A President Nana Akufo-Addo intervened and allowed them to reopen.
We ask these people to go and do their necessary regulatory works and submit same to us as proof that they've done it. We have failed to do that. It is for that reason that as we went out there, we had to lock up the shops. If you lock it and you think you have something to prove, otherwise you bring it and then we'll come and reopen your shop for you.
Watson rejects allegations that the enforcement effort targeted Nigerian traders.
I must, however, admit that probably because of the good neighborliness that exists between Ghana and Nigeria, and because maybe of proximity, most of the affected people happen to be Nigerians. But I must also indicate that other nationals have been affected, some Pakistanis, some Lebanese, some Togolese, and other nationals have been affected. So it is not a matter of Nigerians being targeted.
Watson says the Ministry of Trade and Industry doors were open for the affected traders who want to discuss the situation. He says there are plans to expand enforcement actions to other parts of the country. Chukwu Emeka Enaji, president of the Nigerian Traders Union in Ghana, decried the closure of Ghanaian-owned shops and said the enforcement effort was unfair. He says most of their members do not have Ghana Investment Promotion Council registration because it requires $1 million cash or equity. And he says they were given only 14 days to submit correct paperwork.
And then they started locking shops without asking any documentation anymore. When we called them and asked what is going on, and they told us that they have inspected the place and nobody has complied. And I asked what comply about what. They said we should register with you.
Energy says many of the traders have legally registered their businesses and they pay taxes to the government of Ghana. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Two managers of a bank next door to a police station have been arrested for allegedly emptying their vault over a long weekend in the Gambia. Police traced the men to neighboring Senegal, arrested them as they watched a soccer match in their hotel room, and recovered the loot. Panderambai reports for VOA from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Bank manager Sadio Kor and his assistant Momodi Julde Jallo allegedly made off with more than $21.4 million, about $413,000, from an Access Bank branch in Barra, a coastal fishing town about 4 miles by sea from the capital Banjul. Superintendent Lamin Jai is the spokesman of the Gambia Police Force.
Very well. What we understand is that yesterday, the people, customers really came to the bank to do their transactions, their usual transactions, but they could not access the bank because the doors are all closed or something like this. And so people have been gathered there for a while.
Police launched a manhunt that quickly drew help from their Senegalese colleagues and led to a guest house room in Dakar where Kor and Jallo were found. It was not initially clear how much of the mission money was recovered. Njai say police will get to the bottom of the case and said anyone suspected to be involved in the heist would be questioned.
All this issue will be properly investigated. No stone will be left unturned. Any connection with anybody within or outside will all be looked into properly and done diligently so that we'll be able to have a comprehensive finding and report out of this whole case at the end of the day.
Meanwhile, the two bank officials sit in jail awaiting their fate in court. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.